Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast. We have seven amazing shows to dive into for our 2024 season.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater.
Welcome back to the 2024 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples, and we are recording on site in the Fire Hall Theater. I'm Stephanie Graham, Artistic Associate here at the Playhouse.
And I am Allison Hess, Education and Engagement Manager. Welcome to our last episode and our last production of the 2024 season, Sequence. The luckiest man alive is confronted by a girl who has determined the mathematical secret to his chances. A cutting-edge stem cell research professor questions the improbability of her student getting negative 150% on a multiple-choice test. Sequence examines the interplay between logic and metaphysics, science and faith, luck and probability. Belief systems clash, ideas mutate, and order springs from chaos. With razor-sharp wit and playful language, Sequence asks, in our lives, in our universe, and even in our stories, does order matter?
What a show to wrap up the Fire Hall season. And for our last guest of the podcast season, we are excited to speak to the mother of the Fire Hall, Catherine Mackay. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi. Catherine, thank you for joining us. You are one of the founding members of the Thousand Islands Playhouse. You were the Associate Artistic Director here from 1982 to 2012 and the Director of the Thousand Islands Playhouse Young Company from 2001 to 2012. Outside of TIP, you've worked as Artistic Director, General Manager for Theatre Kingston, worked as a dramaturg and director for theatres across Canada, and are currently the Managing Artistic Producer for Peerless Productions in Kingston. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you very much. Yes. It's nice to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you join us. And especially because this is the 20th anniversary of the Fire Hall Theater. And I know we kind of made a joke that you were the mother of the Fire Hall Theater, but it's, you know, it is true. You are kind of the impetus to how this beautiful space came to be. And I was wondering if you would tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind why you wanted to build this space and how it kind of came to be this really amazing black box space that we see before us.
Wow. Well, the Springer had been going for a while and had been doing very well, but we felt limited that we could by the proscenium, by the shape of the stage, but also by the type of plays that we felt that we could do there and what the audience wanted in that kind of space. And we were excited to explore other art forms, or I was, and other types of plays. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved a black box that you can, you know, just configure it however you want, and you're not stuck into a particular configuration. And we had been eyeing the Fire Hall for a long time because we knew the police and the fire department wanted to leave. This was not an ideal spot. And we were also, I don't know if people are aware, but back in the day, we had to shut up the Springer Theater completely in the winter because it's like a cottage and it's not insulated. So we had to move offices. And so our offices were, we would just camp somewhere downtown. Or in one of the actors' houses or wherever. Wow. So every year we had to move all of our files, the phone, because it was old time phony system. So, you know, all the phones had to be, you know, rerouted and blah, 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 blah. So there was the dual impetus of wanting a more flexible artistic space that would appeal to different types of audiences in which we could do different types of work, and also to have a permanent art administrative center where we didn't have to move in the winter. So, and this space fortuitously was going to be available. So that was
And it's just up the hill from the Springer.
It was perfect. I know. It was really a confluence of, you know, all sorts of great events came together. And this had the space to house a black box theater because that's where they used to store the fire trucks.
I mean, I've seen so many shows over the years, and every time it feels like a different space in there. I just love it.
That's the beauty of it. I know. And the stage management booth can move around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we brought things into the lobby. I think I know a couple times I used the god door up top. And I think it's fun for the audience because that's part of the experience is when you walk in, that's the first part of the experience is you're in the artistic space that you're hoping that the show is taking you into. You're in the world of the show already instantly, which is fun.
Yeah,
I think.
I had a question back to the fire hall. Mm-hmm. So when the team kind of came in and we're like, okay, this will be our space, especially, you know, I think of the theater space, that's mm-hmm. where they used to park the fire trucks, right?
Yeah.
And what kind of renovations or did you have to do much with the space, or was it pretty open to begin with?
No, it was, there was a little bit of a ceiling there. So we had to get rid of that. And, there were some offices over where the lobby is. So we knocked through that. And the biggest renovations actually were around here, just making this space,
administrative
and walls and everything like that. And of course, with a theater, you know, all of a sudden the electrical, you know, you're not just putting in regular plugs. You need, you know, and I'm not an engineer. And it's, you know, Greg and I were always a really good team because his brain worked in an engineering way and my brain worked in an artsy fartsy kind of, wouldn't the space look great as this? And he'd say, okay, if you want the space to look like this, then you're going to need to do this, that, and the other thing.
Right.
Which so was a nice compliment.
Yeah. And was there a decision, like how was the decision made to make that curtain wall in between the lobby and the
Oh
space?
God, we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Because it's a very unique feature. And as it you is, said, it you is. Know, you've done some productions where it's open, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. It is so lovely, even in a community mindset, to be able to have that, to be able to open. Because I know with different events that the community's hosted mm-hmm. in this space, it's been a really useful thing. But
That was a huge part of it too, right? Was also because theaters, you're always saying, how can we make money, especially in the off season? So not only could we use this as administrative space, but we thought, okay, if we don't put a hard wall there, it means that we can open it up for weddings, for receptions, for art shows, for all sorts of other things and generate some income in the off season. So that was a huge part of it. I know it's a mixed blessing. It's great. But when you're tucking there or, you know, and the office staff is going, you know, and you only have a curtain between you and people coming in to buy tickets or whatever. Right. It's not ideal sometimes, but I think that's
outweighed
by the benefits the curtains bring you.
Yeah. And it's a very unique kind of feature, which mm-hmm. I agree is really cool.
You've directed many productions in the Fire Hall, including Girl in a Goldfish Bowl, The Drowning Girls, and The Clockmaker. How's it feel to be back at TIP directing sequence?
Oh, it feels wonderful. I mean, it really is like coming home. And it's been so lovely. Everyone's been so welcoming. And it's been a joy. But it's also, there's still some people around from when I was here too, which is nice. It's been great. And I mean, Jane Christopher, who's designing the costumes for Sequence, and Steve Lucas, who's designing lights and set, they also worked on Drowning Girls. Mm-hmm. And we all just have such fond memories of that show.
A beautiful play.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Gosh, it's one of my favorites. So yeah, it's really nice, you know, bringing the gang back, as Jane keeps saying. Without water.
Yes, yes, without water this time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no water, but some other things, but no water.
Lots of big ideas.
Yes, lots of...
Boy. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Peerless Productions, mm-hmm. a company dedicated to producing professional theater created by and featuring neurodiverse artists. Tell us about the company and how it came about.
Well, I had been, there's a school for neurodiverse individuals in the Kingston community called Heart Studio. I had been invited to do theater classes there and to direct a couple of shows, you know, just little shows that they'd had. And what I discovered is some of them, the people that were attending the school, were so talented and they had so much potential. But it didn't occur to them that they could have a career in the arts because there were no mentors, there were no examples they could follow. Well, when we started it, really in Canada, there was one theater in the UK and that was about it. And so I got thinking, well, what if we established a professional company in Kingston that gave not only, you know, the two or three people that I had identified working with art, but also if I did a call out within the community just to see who was out there and who might be interested. And so we got the rights for Rare. I don't know if you know Judith Thompson's Rare, and it's features eight people living with Down syndrome. So we put a call out and we've found some amazing artists. And what we started doing is we adopted Rare for the our own artist. But then we discovered that, oh, that was really written by a neurotypical artist. Like, that structure was very typical. And the artists we were working with were going, I don't understand that structure. Right. So the next production was actually written by a young man with Down syndrome. And it was during that second production that we decided to form the key company, which is comprised of six individuals with Down syndrome and three neurotypical artists. And then we invite other artists to collaborate. But I consider myself more of an ally working with them, mm-hmm. and, you know, an enabler that I'm helping them fulfill what they want to do artistically. So it's been great. They just go from strength to strength. I'm just
amazing.
Privileged to work with them. Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
And it's really interesting because it began in 2013, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And as you were saying, like when it started, there really wasn't anything like that in Canada. And I feel like it's a little bit of a trailblazer in terms of a company, because you have so many initiatives and so many companies that are focused on creating art, you know, with people with exceptionalities or people who are, as you said, neurodiverse. And it's really cool that that started in Kingston.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that they're paid for their work.
Yeah.
You know, that, it's acknowledged that, you know, they're putting in the time, they're putting in the work, and they're, you know, they're professionals.
Yeah. So, it's not just something, oh, well, that's fun. It's like, no, this can be a career and this can
absolutely. And what I've also noticed in the film and television world as well, you see more and more people with exceptionalities in those mediums as well.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot more representation.
Absolutely. Yeah. But 12, 13, 14 years ago, it wasn't happening so much. So yeah.
Yeah. And I really love the idea of, you know, coming from a play by Judith Thompson and then being like, oh no, we actually, it's not even just being represented on the stage, but it's the representation behind the scenes and in the creative process as well, which is so important, because how much of what we see in the representation that we see just doesn't work because it's coming from a pen of someone who doesn't know the lived experience and doesn't understand how it works. So I think that's really amazing too.
Yeah, absolutely. The last production was, we didn't really use any words. It was all movement based and sound and a lot of video. And so they could just go crazy with what they wanted, and it was astounding what came out. And we've actually been asked to be now part of the Fulda Festival based on that production, because they just went so they're so au courant and what they can do with the technical equipment, because their minds have no limitations. So they say, you know, I want to be floating here and I want to be having light come out of my hands while I'm doing this, and they go, okay, how can we make it go? So it's great for us too to try and make
it expands
happen.
How you think about things too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then you look at it and you go, wow, that's really beautiful. That wouldn't occur to me in a million years, but yeah,
that's
so it's great.
And you tell our audience, what is Fulda?
It's a festival of live digital art.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
And it's in Kingston.
It's in Kingston. Yeah, so they'll hopefully be seen across Canada, which is nice.
Great.
Yeah, which is fabulous.
Well, Sequence is a play that touches, as we said in our short little blurb at the beginning, on some very intellectual and philosophical topics, such as metaphysics, probability, and faith. Like, as a director, like, one, how did you find this play? What made you want to do this play, as well as like, how do you bring it to life?
How do you animate it?
Yeah.
I know. Because at its heart, and what we've been talking a lot about, is there's massive, massive ideas, but at the heart of the play are the people. And, you know, you have to care about the people and how the tension between those ideas and the way they've been living their lives impact their future, I guess. And so you have to care about the people, and you have to care about where they are in the world. And they've all said, I believe in God, I believe in science, I believe in this. They've started off the play black and white in many ways. And through their interactions with each other, they're forced to look at the world another way. But the stakes are very, very high, because if they don't look at the world or accept another person's point of view, it's really going to impact their future. And it's the tension between chaos and order, the sequence that I'm interested in. And you say what attracted me to the play. It was that we try and impose order, and we say we have control over our lives. And, you know, the people who say they have five-year plans and those sorts of things. But I'm interested in that little underlying chaos ball that's underneath all of that. This is, you know, best laid plans, ha ha ha. And it just kind of comes out of nowhere, and explodes everything. And so then you have to regroup and see where you've landed after the explosion. Oh, I'm over here. I thought I was going to be here. And so I find that very interesting as a director, but also as a human being. Mm-hmm. And I am not a science person. I'm not a math person. You know, big chunks of my brain fall out daily as we're trying to figure this out, because there's two separate realities happening at the same time.
Oh, cool.
Throughout the play.
I think, yeah, I've read the play and I always think of it, I don't know if it's been, I think it's discussed this way, but the play is actually written like a double helix in a way.
Yes.
That they're mirrored, these mirrored scenes.
Yeah.
That it, I think in the crafting of the play, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very clever in the crafting. And yeah, and so trying to animate that without being too on the nose about it as well. And just saying, yeah, this is it. Aren't we clever? We just made a double helix. It's coming at it by stealth. And so that they're so involved in the characters, I'm hoping that then, you know, when there's a breath, they go, oh, well, that just happened. But they're not congratulating themselves while it's happening.
Yes, and not just a puzzle to be solved, because it's also about the journey of these characters.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, I know you spoke at the beginning, you know, when you were talking about returning to the fire hall and coming back and working with some of the team members, getting back the band, as you said. And can you tell us a bit about the process? Like, what is your process generally of like collaborating with designers? Because, you know, some directors come in with a very firm vision of this is what this is, and some are very open in terms of like what the designers are hoping to achieve as well. Mm-hmm. What's your process like, and you know, being able to work with people like Jane and like Steve, who you have this great history with, how does that affect the way that you've been working on sequence together?
Well, it's always, I'm sure Stephanie would agree, it's, you know, you when you've worked with artists before, you have a shorthand and you kind
Absolutely.
Of know where each other's coming from. And so if you say something crazy, they get it. They go, oh yeah, okay, yeah, okay, I get it. I mean, Steve still talks about the time I asked him to make a cake that turned into a plane and Drowsy Chaperone. And, you know, but my process is I want to find out what animates the play, what takes us from the first line of the play to the end. What is that verb? What is that action that drives us forward? And where does it live as it's going towards that end, in what sort of reality? So it's like, you know, automatically, mm-hmm. you know, what genre are you talking about? Is it absurdist? Is it, you know, whatever, all those just basic things. When I'm usually talking to someone, it depends on space as well, because if it's a proscenium, they say, okay, everybody's got to look at the world that way.
Right.
So whatever world we create, they are going to see it through that lens. But if I'm doing something outdoor, if I'm doing some sort of, if I'm in a black box and I can do alleys, you know,
in the round,
whatever, or if I'm doing some sort of promenade theater and, you know, it's like people falling through. So a lot just depends on the physical space that I've been hired to direct in, or, you know, what I've created. So once you know, okay, this is the physical space. So within that physical space, we're doing sequence in alley staging, because to me that lent the ability to do the double helix. It gave us a greater opportunity to do that. And also for the mirrors on either end. So it was very easy to do that. So right off the bat, I knew I had that in my head. So I did go to Steve saying, I would like to do it out of staging. And from there, we just brainstormed. And, you know, we also have this ruckin' whiteboards and ladders, and, you know, that we've got to deal with. So how do we do the practical things? But then also, how much of this exists in the mind of the characters? So how much of it is surreal and how much of it is very
right.
real?
And then, as you said, you were able to work with Jane Christopher again.
Yeah.
And costumes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think sometimes when we think of costumes, when we do a show like Mamma Mia, and it's like a giant cast with lots of different costumes and sequins, and people really get costumes. But I think the subtleties of costumes in a show, like sequins with four characters, mm-hmm. and maybe not quite as obvious, like, okay, you're dressing up like, you know, it, like a different time period or something, where you're trying to tell a story with these subtle elements.
Mm-hmm.
And how was the discussion with Jane about the costumes?
That one was interesting, because, you know, we've got these two different realities and we've got these characters at two different stages in their DNA development, if you
right.
will. And, you know, one of them has already started to mutate and one of them is pre-mutation, if you will. And so we were talking about what does that look like when someone is fully formed and someone is not quite formed? And so we were going with colors, you know, and you know, do we go with grays that then go into something else as they mature and as the sequence, you know, locks into being. So that's fun. What I love about Jane is she just is so open. So you'll say, well, let's try this. And you try and she goes, I don't like it. You don't like it either. And it's true. And so off you go with something else. And you know, and you just keep trying stuff and nothing is precious with Jane. Yeah. Now, I don't direct a lot of big shows like Stephanie directs. So I know, you know, you don't have the luxury with so many characters to say that's not working.
Yeah, but yeah. I think it's really an opportunity, especially with a cast of four. And also you can really work with that actor sometimes, you know, more closely to when, as opposed to, you know, a show with 100 costumes, I think you can really develop those characters with the clothes. And I think that's such a special relationship with a director and a costume designer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yes, and when there's only four people, you have the luxury of time too to spend a lot of time in fittings, talking to the actors and just talking about, you know, how it feels on them as well. And so it becomes a collaboration that way as well. And that happened a lot with this show, which is nice. So.
Well, I mean, I think that's the beauty of theater is collaboration on all sides. And
absolutely. That's why we do it. It's a collaborative art form. Yeah.
Amazing. I'm really looking forward to it. I've seen some of the designs and just hearing you speak about it. I cannot wait. And
I know,
the beauty too of alley seating is you can come see it multiple times and you'll get a completely different view on what's happening.
Well, you certainly will with this one because there's the plexiglass whiteboards in between. So you'll see it. It's very different.
Very different perspective.
Yeah. For sure.
Which I think is actually part of the play too, seeing things from a different perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah.
With Ally, do you, when you're directing, because the nature of Ally staging, for those who don't know, there's audience kind of on either side and then the stage is through the middle in the alley. And part of that is that the audience sees the actors from a different perspective, but they also have the opportunity to watch other people watching the show. Mm-hmm. Is that something that when you're directing an alley, do you take that into consideration when you're blocking and doing those sorts of things? Or is that sort of an added bonus?
I think for me, it's more of an added bonus. Mm-hmm. I find alley staging in many ways the easiest configuration to work on because you don't have to do that fake, I'm facing the audience, but now I'm talking to my friend in a completely unnatural way, which sometimes you're forced to in a proscenium. But in this, you can talk naturally to someone and everybody can see, which is lovely. And it's also, the audience is complicit in it, which is what I like about it, because you can see the audience on either side. And so they're just more involved. There's less of them and us. And there's less of a fourth wall barrier there with that configuration because they're watching each other as part of it. So
yeah, which is, again, as you said, even at the beginning of this conversation, the beauty of a black box, right? Where you're entering that world the minute you enter the space, right? You're not just sitting and waiting for it to play out for you. You're actually a part of it as you enter.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm, as I said, very excited. I cannot wait. And it's so special to have you back directing in that space.
Speaking of having you back, how has your time been here in Gananoque? Have you been to any spots or seen any spots that you're looking forward to checking out or visiting again?
Yes. I mean, I know you spent decades here.
Decades and decades.
You know, is there places that like have kind of changed or something like, oh, that's moved in and that's different. I wonder what's...
Oh, the downtown is so funky and so cool now. I mean, it never, you know, back in the day, it was... Not bad. It was like Donovan's Hardware and a couple of little restaurants and some antique shops and that was it. And so to have these, you know, new shops and the art gallery, there's so many art galleries. They're beautiful.
They're fantastic.
Yeah. So I've been puttering, you know, going in and out of those and which is great. And there's a patio, you know, like being able to have a meeting with Steve on a patio, which was really nice. But my favorite thing is always that in the middle of Tech Week, when you're on a break, you can go out and you can just look at the water. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's so calming, it's so grounding, and it's so beautiful, and it just it's inspiring. And then you go back in the room and you're ready to go again. It's just
a little like a breath of literally fresh air.
Right? Yeah. And but it's like a breath of psychic breath air, you know, because it's so good for the soul when you go out and you look at it.
Yeah, we're so lucky to be so close to this incredible body of water.
Oh, yeah. That was always the appeal.
Thank you for coming and speaking with us. Catherine popped over on her lunch break because you're in the midst of
rehearsal.
So I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Of course.
Okay.
So great. And we always like to say thank you to Mark Hunt, who composes the music for the Playhouse podcast. For more ticket information about Sequence, come and visit us at 1000ounceplayhouse.com.
See you at the theater.